Translation, Lord Chaitanya dispatched the two generals, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, to Vrindavan to preach the bhakti cult. Purport, when Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami went to Vrindavan, there was not a single temple, but by their preaching, they were gradually able to construct various temples. Sanatan Goswami constructed the Madan Mohan Temple, and Rupa Goswami constructed the Govindaji Temple. Similarly, their nephew, Jiva Goswami, constructed the Radha Damodar Temple. Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami constructed the Radha Ramana Temple. Sri Lokanath Goswami constructed the Gokulananda Temple. And Shyamananda Goswami constructed the Shyamasundar Temple. In this way, many temples were gradually constructed. For preaching, construction of temples is also necessary. The Goswamis not only engaged in writing books, but also constructed temples because both are needed for preaching work. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted the cult of his Sankirtan movement to spread all over the world. Now that the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has taken up this task of preaching the cult of Lord Chaitanya, its members should not only construct temples in every town and village of the globe, but also distribute books which have already been written and further increase the number of books. Both distribution of books and construction of temples must continue side by side in parallel lines. Nana shastra vicharinaika nipano sad dharma sangstapako lokanam hitakarino tribhuvane manyo sharanya karo radha krishna padaravinda bhajanan nandena mataliko vande rupa sanatano raguyago shri jiva gopalako. So we have a description here of the Lord Chaitanya practically being described like the commanding general, sending out he calls them here generals or commanders in chief. Rupa and Sanatan sent them to Vrindavan to reestablish, you could say, that Vrindavan is a holy place. At that time, practically, it was just an agricultural field. There wasn't much there, and it was jungle. And so they went there performing severe austerities, living under trees, and a different tree every night, and chanting the holy name, and gradually things began to develop in a wonderful way. So these two were deputed by Lord Chaitanya because of their qualifications. They were born in a very aristocratic family, Brahmana family. And actually where they lived, they were great devotees right from the beginning practically. They had created a duplicate of Vrindavan. They had their own Radhan Shyamakunds, their own Govardhan Hill. They had more or less established a Vrindavan away from Vrindavan. But when they came to maturity, they took service under the Mohammedan Nawab. And because of this, they were... Actually, in one purport in a lecture, Prabhupada said they were exterminated by the Brahmana community. Actually, later in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada used the word excommunicated rather than exterminated. as you know, exterminated means they were killed. But in a sense, they were killed socially. Because at that time, the Brahminical community was so strict that if a Brahmin took service under anyone else, they were considered to be, they'd lost their caste. They were considered extremely fallen and low. They were able to take up service in the sense of an advisory capacity. They were often advisory had an advisory function to kings, but not to serve them as government ministers, as Rupa and Sanatana Goswami had done. So because of this, they were kind of looked upon as fallen members of the Brahminical community. In fact, they were not even considered to be part of that community any longer. They were considered to be on the same level as Muslims, especially since they had adopted or accepted names, Dabir Khas and Sakir Malik. They were considered to have become Muslims. So it's interesting that later on, when they went to Jagannath Puri, successively, first Rupa Goswami went to see Lord Chaitanya at Jagannath Puri. This was later on, after he had sent them to Vrindavan. But when they got there, the person that they stayed with was Haridas Thakur. First Rupa Goswami stayed with him, and then after that, Sanatana Goswami came and stayed also. They both lived with Haridas Thakur because he was, because as a Muslim, he was also considered in a kind of a... Lord Chaitanya went daily to visit Haridas Thakur and used to regularly embrace him. Still, they didn't... It's kind of an interesting dynamic because in one sense, he transgressed a lot of the Vedic etiquette, you could say, by going and seeing such persons and embracing them and spending hours talking to them, bringing them prasadam, and so forth. On the other hand, he didn't disturb the social condition in another sense, that he let them kind of group together as so-called fallen members of society, even though they were the most exalted, learned personalities. Sanatana Goswami was famous for his humility and his meekness, actually. It's so much so that when he first approached Lord Chaitanya, he said, "People say that I'm a very learned person. But actually, how can I be learned? I don't know who I am." So this is actually the fact that he was presenting himself, of course, as an ordinary conditioned soul. And ordinary conditions, they don't know who they are. They think that they identify very much with this mind and this body. And of course, the Vaishnavas, their platform is Sarvapadi Vinirmuktam Tatparatrena Nirmalam, that they don't have any such designations. They're free from all designation. But generally, people don't have any clue about their actual identities. And it's a wonderful history. There's some important points in the purport. One, they talk about how the Goswamis were very much engaged in literary work. There's two things. They said they should be done in parallel. Constructing temples and writing books. He says that, Prabhupada writes, "Its members should not only construct temples, but also distribute books which have already been written and further increase the number of books." So not only are we meant to distribute books, but to also, if possible, write them to expand the glories of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna. Books may also be written. And there are some other nice quotes on this theme, if I can find them. I sort of made some extensive notes for this class, most of which I'm probably not going to have time to use, as usual. But there's some nice things. He says, this is from the Journey of Self-Discovery. Prabhupada writes, he's actually having a conversation with one of his disciples about the Marxist society. And they're talking about trying to achieve a classless society. And Prabhupada's talking about how impossible that is in a material sense to do. But then he says, "So this is the formula for a classless society. Make Krishna, God, the center and do everything for him. There are no classes in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Now you are writing philosophy. But if I want you to wash dishes, you will do so immediately. Because you know that whatever you do, you are working for Krishna and for your spiritual master. In the material world, different kinds of work have different values, but in Krishna consciousness, everything is done on the absolute platform. Whether you wash dishes or write books or worship the deity, the value is the same because you are serving Krishna. That is a classless society. Actually, the perfect classless society is Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, some are coward boys, some are cows, some are trees, some are fathers, some are mothers. But the center is Krishna. And everyone is satisfied simply by loving him. So Prabhupada's explaining how this is the only way you can have a classless society, is everyone is dedicated simply for the pleasure of the Lord. And that way it may be possible. He said, when all people become Krishna conscious and understand how to love him, then there will be a classless society, otherwise it is not possible. In another place he says, to write books and publish them for the enlightenment of the general populace is real service to the Lord. That was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's opinion, and he specifically told his disciples to write books. He actually preferred to publish books rather than establish temples. Temple construction is meant for the general populace and neophyte devotees. But the business of advanced and empowered devotees is to write books, publish them, and distribute them widely. According to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, distributing literature is like playing on a great mridanga. Consequently, we always request members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to publish as many books as possible and distribute them widely throughout the world. By thus following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, one can become a Rupanuga devotee. I'll just read a couple more. He says, another quote, he says, a carpenter can write about Krishna if he's thoughtful. Anyone. Therefore it is said, Yadutama shloka gunanavarnanam, whatever your profession, you must know that the original cause is Krishna. Now, make research work and find out how Krishna is the original cause. And then he goes on to say, yes, so everyone can write books. Everyone wants to write books. Not always for the right reasons, of course. Everyone wants to write books, wants to show some scholarship. Do it. But the conclusion should be that here is the original cause. And it is already said in the Shastra, Krishna personally says that Ahang Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvang Pravartate Iti Matfaba Jantimang Buddha Bhava Samanvita. So this verse describing how Krishna is the source of everything, that if one can establish this, he can write as much as he likes if he continually focuses on this point, that Krishna is the origin, that Krishna is the original cause. So then he talks a little bit about Vrindavan. This is a lecture he gave in Vrindavan. He says, this place was excavated by the Goswamis. Shad Goswami. Sanatan Goswami came here. Rupa Goswami came here. And then other Goswamis, Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami, of course, there was a third brother, Anupam, which we'll talk about him a little bit also. Anupam, the brother of Rupa and Sanatan, he was the youngest. He was a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra. So he and Rupa Goswami initially went to Vrindavan on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after meeting with him Varanasi or Prayag, where they initially met with Lord Chaitanya. Huh? No one knows? Anyway, it's in my notes somewhere, so anyway, he sent them to Vrindavan first, and they met there with Subhuti Roy, who was a great devotee who used to make money by collecting firewood and selling it. And with whatever little money he was able to collect, he served the Vaishnavas. So he was the first person to greet them in Vrindavan. Anyway, he says that they established Vrindavan, Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Raghunathas Goswami, all joined together for executing the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to write books about Krishna, his pastimes, his leela. very, I mean to say, highly spiritual understanding books they wrote. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Sadharma Sanstapako. This is the business of the Goswamis. The first symptom is Krishna Kirtana Gana Narthana Paro. They were always busy. Krishna Kirtan. Krishna Kirtan means, just like we perform Kirtan with coal, Karatal, this is also Krishna Kirtan. And to write books, that is also Krishna Kirtan. And to read books, that is also Krishna Kirtan. Not that simply this Kirtan is Kirtan. If you write books about Krishna, if you read books about Krishna, if you talk about Krishna, if you think of Krishna, you worship Krishna, you cook for Krishna, you eat for Krishna. So that is Krishna Kirtan. So that's one point, that books are meant to be, and temples are meant to be established so that people, I know Prabhupada once in Mayapur commented that if we just live in a mud hut here in Mayapur, who will come? So we have established this nice temple so that thousands of people will come here. So temples are must be there, and then books about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness need to be written. The ones that have been written, the very important and essential books of Srila Prabhupada, of course, need to be continuously published and distributed. But he says also here that other books should also be written and distributed. So this is, says this business is to continue side by side in parallel lines. Now, the Goswamis, great histories. Prabhupada writes a summation of this history, which I'm going to read some of. This is from the Adi Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he describes the 43rd, 44th, and 45th branches of the tree. He describes the Lord Chaitanya and the predecessor Acharyas, Ishwara Puri and Madhavendra Puri, who are like the root and the trunk. And then Lord Chaitanya, and then all of his disciples as the branches and sub-branches. So it says here that the 43rd, 4th, and 5th branches, these were Sri Sanatan, Sri Rupa, and Anupam. And Kaviraj Goswami describes them as the best of all. So these great commanders in chief, or generals, as they're described here in this purport, in this verse, were such great personalities. Very humble, very beautiful, learned, austere. They had all good qualities. It sometimes describes that Rupa Goswami was considered to be the like a duplicate of Lord Chaitanya in terms of his appearance. He was a very beautiful looking person in the way that Lord Chaitanya was beautiful. Here we see that Anupam was the father. Does anyone know? Do you all know? Who is Anupam? First, we know that Anupam was the brother, but who is his son? Yes. Srila Jiva Goswami. So imagine having a son like Jiva Goswami. He's considered the greatest scholar practically of all time. And it says that his former name was Vallabha, but after Lord Chaitanya met him, he gave him the name Anupam. Because of working in the Muslim government, these three brothers were given the title Mulik. Well, they all were employed in the Muslim government. Prabhupada writes also, our personal family is connected with the Muliks of Mahatma Gandhi Road in Calcutta, and we often used to visit their Radha Govinda temple. They belong to the same family as we do. So Prabhupada actually came in a genealogical sense, came in that line of Rupa and Sanatan and Anupam. He says, our family Gotra, or original genealogical line, is the Gotama Gotra, or a line of disciples of Gotama Muni, and our surname is Day. But due to accepting the posts of zamindars in the Muslim government, they received the title Mulik. Similarly, Rupa, Sanatan, and Vallabha were also given the title Mulik. Mulik means Lord, just as the English government gives rich and respectable persons the title of Lord. So the Muslims gave the title Mulik to rich, respectable families that have intimate connections with the government. Thus, the title Mulik is found not only among the Muslims, but also the among the Hindu aristocracy. This title is not restricted to a particular family, but is given to different families and castes. The qualifications for receiving it are wealth and respectability. Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami belong to the Bharadwaja Gotra, which indicates that they belonged either to the family or disciplic succession of Bharadwaja Muni. As members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we belong to the family or disciplic succession of Saraswati Goswami, and thus we are known as Saraswatas. Obeisances are therefore offered to the spiritual master as Saraswata Deva, or a member of the Saraswat family, Namaste Saraswati Deva, whose mission is to broadcast the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauravani Pracharane, and to fight with impersonalists and voidists. Yeah, he doesn't say just talk to them. He says to fight with them, to fight with impersonalists and voidists. Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarani. This was also the occupational duty of Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Anupam Goswami. So there's a great history of this family. They took birth in the village of Ramakeli, and it's also in this village that Lord Jiva Goswami took birth. So when Lord Chaitanya visited the village of Ramakeli, he met Vallabha there. And later, Rupa Goswami, after meeting Lord Chaitanya, resigned from government service. And when he went to Vrindavan to meet Lord Chaitanya, Vallabha accompanied him. The meeting of Rupa Goswami and Vallabha with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Allahabad is described in the Madhya Lila, chapter 19. So it's Allahabad. That's where they first, Prayag. And this is described in some detail in the 19th chapter of Madhya Lila, which is also Rupa Siksha. The instructions that he gave to Rupa Goswami are detailed in its 19th chapter, and the instructions to Sanatana are all detailed in the 20th chapter of Madhya Lila. So this very elaborate instructions, and he basically, Lord Chaitanya described that he was giving in code what they would need to establish the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in an authoritative way. He described himself as giving them the outline that they could fill in the rest. So we know that Rupa Goswami and Vallabha, after meeting with Lord Chaitanya in Prayag and being instructed by Lord Chaitanya, he sent them to Vrindavan. Now what happened was, he had ordered them to go to Vrindavan, but Rupa Goswami began to plead with the Lord, "No, please, let me stay with you. I don't think I can give up your association." How do you think Lord Chaitanya responded? He just said, "You have to follow my order and go to Vrindavan." So he wasn't sentimental about spreading this movement. He didn't just pat him on the head and say, "It's okay, all right, you can stay with me then." No, he said, "No, you go. I'll meet you later. In Jagannath Puri, I'll meet you later. But now you go." So he sent them off. And it says here they met this gentleman in Vrindavan. And now it's interesting, they Prabhupada describes this man as a gentleman, but he was living like a pauper. Subodhi Roy, he's a great devotee who gathered firewood by selling this firewood that he gathered from the forest. And he took care of them. He showed them all the 12 forests of Vrindavan. And they lived there in Vrindavan for a month or so, and then they went looking for Sanatana Goswami. Because I don't know if you know the whole story. Anyway, Sanatana Goswami had been imprisoned because the Nawab depended on him very much to run government affairs. And so he kept claiming to be sick and was not reporting for his duties. So finally the Nawab went there with a physician and said, "You know, there's nothing wrong with you. It's obvious. Why don't you come? And I need to go out." And he was making a joke, as Prabhupada explains it. He was joking that, "I want to go out and plunder everywhere and I need you to maintain the government. Because he considered them like brothers, Sanatan Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. He says, your elder brother wants to go out and plunder. I want you to take care of the government. Why are you neglecting? So Sanatan Goswami replied that, well, you better find somebody else. I don't think you can expect anything further from me. Besides, you want to go to Orissa and give people their pain. And I don't want any part of that. So he became quite irritated and he had him arrested. Now, in the meantime, Rupa Goswami had divided up all his wealth and he'd taken off. He made his getaway. But Sanatan Goswami had been imprisoned. I think it was something like a house arrest, though, because it describes that the person that was had him in jail was quite friendly. So it was kind of an interesting situation. He was under house arrest, but it was kind of just so he couldn't get away. The Nawab didn't want him escaping. So Rupa Goswami had left, I think it was 10,000 coins, gold coins, with a Bengali grocer. He'd left this money behind. Said, use this to get your freedom. In fact, he sent it to him in a verse form. So it was a bit mysterious, kind of a mysterious verse, advising him to try to make his getaway if he could. So Sanatan was very artful, because he told the jailer, he said, look, he said, you're such a learned scholar and a gentleman and a great personality. And you can understand that it's a great act of piety to help a person who's in prison escape, because, you know, I want to go to, where is it the Muslims go? To Mecca. Yeah, he said, I want to make a pilgrimage to Mecca. And you could help me in this. And just to make it, you know, a sweeter sort of deal, I'm sorry, I'm paraphrasing a little here. He didn't say it was a sweet deal. He said, here, take these 5,000 gold coins. And, you know, let me go. So the jailer said, you know, I really would like to let you go, but I'm afraid of what might happen to me if I do that. So Sanatan said, all right, take 7,000 gold coins. And the jailer was getting really tempted. He said, and don't worry. He said, you just tell them that I said I needed to go to the bathroom. And that I went down by the Ganges River, and I had shackles on. And you were watching me, but then suddenly when I saw the Ganges, I threw myself into the waters and I went under, and that was the last I saw of you. And I looked for a long time and I couldn't find anything. Just tell him that. So finally the jailer he spoke to him so sweetly, and of course he also gave him a nice bribe, that the jailer let him go. And so he began to travel through the, kind of not in the direct path, because of course if he'd stuck to the main roads, he would have been easily arrested. So he was traveling through the forest and the mountainous area, and they came to this place. He had one servant with him called Ishan, and at that time Ishan was carrying 8 gold coins, you know, just for expenses. So they were traveling and they came to this place, like a kind of a hotel, not exactly a hotel, but anyway, a place you could spend the night. Not quite sure, you know. But anyway, the person that ran this place was like the king of the dacoits and robbers of that area. He was in charge of that whole area. They did a lot of plundering and robbing. And he had an astrologer with him. And the astrologer said, these people have got 8 gold coins. You know. So they were actually plotting to kill them both and take the money. But Sanatan Goswami was very experienced in the ways of government and diplomacy. So he thought, why is this hotel keeper being so polite? You know, as a politician, you know, a lot of times if people are really friendly and nice to you, it means they want something. Or they expect to get something. So, and this is often, you know, like sometimes people say to each other, joking, they say, what do you want? You know, if you speak nicely to them, they say, what do you want? So Sanatana Goswami sort of divined that something was up. So he went to this hotel keeper and said, and he didn't know that Ishan had 8 gold coins. He thought there was, he asked Ishan, and Ishan said there were 7 coins. So he took the 7 coins and he went to this person and said, look, he said, why don't you take these 7 coins and help me get over these mountains? Because, you know, I'm sure that somebody, if you don't take them, somebody else will want to take them and probably I'll end up getting killed. So this pleased the hotel keeper very much. And he assigned 4 guards, you could say, to get him across the hilly tract. If I had a better memory, I could tell you the names of the mountains, but it's gone now. But anyway, they were crossing these mountains under armed guard, and he finally came to a place where his sister had married one gentleman. Srikanta, I think his name was. So it was his brother-in-law. And he was going to spend a little time there just to rest and recover. And this brother-in-law was suggesting, "Will you get cleaned up, wear fresh clothing, and why don't you stay here for some time?" He said, "No, I'm not stay here for another minute." So he gave him a very nice blanket to keep him warm, and again he continued his journey. So this is the, you just get some idea of the kind of endeavors that that he made to get to Lord Chaitanya. And this is the nice thing about to try to understand the mentality of the Goswamis, because when we hear about the kinds of austerities that they performed and the kind of life they led, we think, well, that's so beyond anything that I can imagine doing. Living under trees and eating practically nothing and living such a simple life. But if one is sufficiently addicted to Krishna, then it's possible. Just like generally, we want many different things, but Krishna is not really at the top of the list. We desire many things, but these are devotees that didn't have any other desire but to be with Krishna, to be with Lord Chaitanya. So they were ready to do anything. Just as, and of course we know that they're, as in Krishna Lila, they were gopis. And the mentality of the gopis is that they're ready to do anything, to take any risk, to perform any kind of austerity, any kind of difficult, they'll undergo any kind of difficulty just to get Krishna's company. So they had the same attitude, exactly the same attitude, that they were prepared to do anything to get Krishna's company. So in this way, finally Sanatana Goswami met with Lord Chaitanya in Varanasi. At that time, he was staying at the house, I think at the house of Chandrasekhar. And when he arrived, he was just sitting outside the door. He found out where Lord Chaitanya was staying, and he was sitting outside the door, and Lord Chaitanya could understand what was going on. So he said, "Go and see if there's a Vaishnava outside." And so Chandrasekhar went out and looked, and he said, he just saw this, what appeared to be a Muslim mendicant. So he said, "No, there's no Vaishnava out there." And then Lord Chaitanya said, "Well, is there anyone out there at all?" He said, "Well, yeah, there's someone who looks like a Muslim." So he said, "That's him, bring him in here immediately." So as soon as he brought Sanatana Goswami into the room, Lord Chaitanya leapt up and began to embrace him again and again. And then Sanatana was crying and saying, "Please don't touch me, I'm very fallen and very low." And then Lord Chaitanya began to cry, and then Sanatana began to cry. And there was this, you can imagine it was quite a wild and emotional scene going on. Chandrasekhar was completely startled. "I don't know, what is this? And Lord Chaitanya's embracing this Muslim mendicant?" He was just really surprised. And so then, of course, anyways, they're long histories, but he shaved up, and they wanted him to take on these nice garments, and he said no. He said, he told Tabin Mishra was one of the other associates that the Lord was spending time with. He said, just give me some of your old cloth. So he gave him this old cloth, and he ripped it into different pieces, and he made a little gumshoe-like bottom piece and a little top. And he began to perform so many different kinds of austerities, all of which Lord Chaitanya very much approved of, including giving up this valuable blanket that his brother-in-law had given him. So, all during this time, you know, and all this traveling, Rupa and Anupam had kept trying to link up with Sanatana Goswami, but they kept missing him somehow. They kept missing each other. Finally, Rupa Goswami came to stay in Jagannath Puri. He stayed with Haridas Thakur, as we mentioned earlier. And at that time, Sanatan, well, I wanted to talk about Sanatan first. When Sanatan came and stayed with Haridas Thakur in Puri, by the time he'd gone through the Jarikanda forest and various other places, and he'd contacted this disease where he was covered with itching sores. And he was really discouraged because whenever Lord Chaitanya saw him, he would embrace him. And the sores would ooze some kind of foul smelling liquid onto the body of Lord Chaitanya, so he was feeling really like, this is a horrible situation. I've come here, and now I'm just contaminating, you know, the atmosphere. He had quite a humble spirit, Sanatana Goswami anyway. And so he was thinking, well, maybe the best thing for me to do is just throw myself under the wheels of the Jagannath cart and leave my body. And that way I won't create any further offense. And it wasn't like an affected attitude. You know, sometimes I knew that I had this friend, I won't mention any names, this devotee who used to, as a joke, he used to imitate the pastime where this great devotee, Lord Chaitanya, was being fanned with a peacock fan. And when he saw the peacock, he fainted in ecstasy. So he used to sort of imitate that pastime sometimes. So the point is that that's sort of pretentious behavior, although it was a joke. But here, his humility was not at all pretentious. It was his genuine sentiment that the life was not worth living if he was simply going to be here and create an offense to Lord Chaitanya. So he was thinking about killing himself. So Lord Chaitanya, he didn't actually say it that he was going to do this. But one day, kind of out of the blue, Lord Chaitanya began to speak to Sanatan. And he said, your body is my property. You have already surrendered unto me, therefore you no longer have any claim to your body. Why should you want to destroy another's property? Can't you consider what is right and wrong? Your body is my principal instrument for executing many necessary functions. By your body I shall carry out many tasks. You shall have to ascertain the basic principles of a devotee, devotional service, love of Godhead, Vaishnav duties and Vaishnav characteristics. You will also have to explain Krishna's devotional service, establish centers for cultivation of love of Krishna, excavate lost places of pilgrimage, and teach people how to adopt the renounced order. Mathura Vrindavan is my own very dear abode. I want to do many things there to preach Krishna consciousness. So this was actually the mission. He was describing in brief the mission of Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami in Vrindavan to do all those things. So then Lord Chaitanya goes on and he says, by the order of my mother, I am sitting here in Jagannath Puri. Therefore, I cannot go to Mathura Vrindavan to teach people how to live there according to religious principles. I have to do all this work through your body, but you want to give it up. How can I tolerate this? So Sanatana Goswami at this point is a bit bewildered. But he says, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. No one can understand the deep ideas you plan within your heart. A wooden doll chants and dances according to the direction of a magician, but does not know how he is dancing and singing. My dear Lord, as you cause one to dance, he dances accordingly. But how he dances And who is causing him to dance, he does not know. So then, Lord Chaitanya, it's interesting that the psychology here, Lord Chaitanya then turns to Haridas Thakur, who is kind of like the caretaker of Rupa and Sanatan when they stayed there. He was the one they stayed with. He was the one that advised them in different ways. So Lord Chaitanya turns to Haridas Thakur to get Haridas Thakur to say what he wants him to say. He says, "My dear Haridas, please hear me. This gentleman wants to destroy another's property. One who is entrusted with another's property does not distribute it or use it for his own purposes. Therefore, tell him not to do such an unlawful thing." So he was feeling, you know, he actually used to talk about Sanatana as though he was his elder, because Sanatana Goswami is a little bit older than Lord Chaitanya. So he didn't feel it was quite, but Haridas Thakur was older still. So he kind of turns to the elder and says, "You tell him. Tell him he shouldn't do this. Maybe he won't listen to me, but you tell him, then he'll listen." So then Haridas Thakur replies, "We are falsely proud of our capabilities. Actually, we cannot understand your deep intentions. Unless you inform us, we cannot understand what your purpose is or what you want to do through whom. Why, dear sir, since you, a great personality, have accepted Sanatana Goswami, he is greatly fortunate. No one can be as fortunate as he is." Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Haridas Thakur and Sanatana, and then he got up and left to perform his noon duties. So, at this point, Sanatana Goswami, of course, had given up the idea of committing suicide after being given this important mission. And then Haridas Thakur turns to Sanatana Goswami and he says, "My dear Sanatana, no one can find the limits of your good fortune. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted your body as his own property. Therefore, no one can equal you in good fortune. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cannot do with his personal, what he cannot do with his personal body, he wants to do through you, and he wants to do it in Mathura. Whatever the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants us to do will successfully be accomplished." Now there's an interesting point too. If Krishna has a desire, if you accept that desire as your mission, then it'll take place. This is a spiritual principle that with the order comes the potency to accomplish it. So here he's given him this order, and Haridas Thakur is affirming it'll be accomplished. He says, "This is your great fortune. That is my mature opinion." So, you know, somebody, if anybody else said this, you might think, well, they're being a little bit, conceited maybe. "This is my mature opinion." It's like if I give somebody advice, say, "This is my mature opinion." It sounds a little, haughty or something. But actually, he was just stating, he was mature. He was a Namacharya. He was standing the holy name constantly, day and night. He was a highly evolved personality. And he just said, "This is my mature opinion. I don't think there's any dispute about this." Saying that there's no doubt about it, in other words. "I can understand from the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he wants you to write books about the conclusive decision of devotional service and about the regulative principles ascertained from the revealed scriptures. My body could not be used in the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." So now he's really complicating Sanatana's life. He's telling him that this person, Haridas Thakur, that Sanatana Goswami worshipped, is telling him that I couldn't do anything for Lord Chaitanya. He says, "Therefore, although it, his body, took birth in the land of India, this body has been useless." But Sanatana Goswami was a very mature devotee also. So he didn't go for it. He says, "Oh, Haridas Thakur, who is equal to you? You are one of the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, you are the most fortunate. The mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for which he has descended as an incarnation, is to spread the importance of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Now, instead of personally doing so, he is spreading it through you, my dear sir. You are chanting the holy name 300,000 times daily and informing everyone of the importance of such chanting. Some behave very well, but do not preach the cult of Krishna consciousness. Whereas others preach, but do not behave properly. You simultaneously perform both duties in relation to the holy name by your personal behavior and by your preaching. Therefore, you are the spiritual master of the entire world, for you are the most advanced devotee in the world. So, this may sound like some type of competition. You know, sometimes devotees imitate this sort of sentiment of trying to one-up each other in humility. You know, they'll say, oh, Prabhu, you're the greatest, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can do this and that and the other. And then the other devotee is, oh, no, I'm the most fallen. But this is not on that platform. This is the honest sentiment and declaration of feeling by two very elevated devotees. It's just like Yudhisthira used to consider that although Narada glorified Yudhisthira as being such a great devotee, the personal associate of Krishna, Yudhisthira used to think that compared to Narada, he was nothing. That was their sincere sentiment. It wasn't a social nicety. It wasn't just some kind of competition of who could out-humble the other. It was the actual sincere expression of their inner feelings. And what Sanatan says is absolutely true. And what Haridas says is also absolutely true. That's from the point of view of an Uttamadikari. Now, Haridas, of course, saying that his body has been useless, who can understand such a sentiment? But that's how he was feeling. So, these great devotees of Lord Chaitanya, Rupa, and Sanatana Goswami, they were such great souls, and they established the Dham, re-established Vrindavan Dham. They built, as you know, Rupa Goswami established the Radha Govinda temple, had many, many disciples, as did Sanatana Goswami. Anupam died early. He never left Vrindavan, but he disappeared long before. At one point, they tried to convert, because he was such a dedicated devotee of Lord Ram, they tried to get him to give that up and worship Radha Krishna the way they were. So they said, you should... Like, and because they were his elder brothers, they said, no, you should worship Radha Krishna like us. He said, well, okay, I'll try. So he was up all night, and he couldn't sleep. And he didn't know what to do, because in his heart, he just couldn't accept that he had any other worshipful Lord. He understood that Lord Chaitanya was God. But at the same time, he considered him to be Ramachandra. That was his sentiment. That was his mood. And although he tried his best to adopt what they had asked him to adopt, he said in the morning, I can't do it. I apologize, but there's no way I can do that. I can't take my head from the feet of the Lord of my heart, which is Lord Ramachandra. So, in this way, he was a great devotee and dedicated to the mission of Lord Chaitanya. There's a nice section also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it talks about when people would come, would visit Vrindavan, and then when they would come back, it says people would question them about the activities of Rupa and Sanatana. Of course, this is in the early days of their time there, before all these temples were established. If someone returned to his country after seeing Vrindavan, the associates of the Lord would ask him questions. They would ask those returning from Vrindavan, how are Rupa and Sanatan doing in Vrindavan? What are their activities in the renounced order? How do they manage to eat? These were the questions they asked. The Lord's associates would also ask, how is it that Rupa and Sanatan are engaging in devotional service 24 hours daily? At that time, the person who had returned from Vrindavan would praise Srila Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. The brothers actually have no fixed residence. They reside beneath trees. One night under one tree, the next night under another. Srila Rupa and Sanatana Goswami beg a little food from the houses of brahmanas. Giving up all kinds of material enjoyment, they take only some dry bread and fried chickpeas. So just try to imagine, I can't imagine it. But anyway, living off a little dried bread and some fried chickpeas. That was your daily intake. It says they carry only water pots and they wear torn quilts. They always chant the holy names of Krishna and discuss his pastimes. In great jubilation, they also dance. They engage almost 24 hours daily in rendering service to the Lord. They usually sleep only an hour and a half. And some days, when they continuously chant the Lord's holy name, they do not sleep at all. Sometimes, they write transcendental literatures about devotional service. And sometimes, they hear about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spend their time thinking about the Lord. When the personal associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would hear of the activities of Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, they would say, what is wonderful for a person who has been granted the Lord's mercy? So this is the, you could say, is kind of the purport to how is it possible to perform such activities? Sometimes, and then we were raising this question at the beginning, how is it possible? And it says here that one who has been granted the Lord's mercy, these things are possible. Otherwise, they're not possible to sustain such a lifestyle, to behave in such a dedicated way. It's not possible. So what time am I supposed to finish? Am I already over time? Oh, yeah? Okay, so we have a little more time. Prabhupada writes a nice purport to this series of verses, which I'll read, and then I'll open it up for questions, if there are any. He says, Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami had no fixed residence. They stayed beneath a tree for one day only and wrote huge volumes of transcendental literature. They not only wrote books, but chanted, danced, discussed Krishna, and remembered Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Thus they executed devotional service. In Vrindavan, there are Prakriti Sahajiyas who say that writing books or even touching books is taboo. For them, devotional service means being relieved of these from these activities. Whenever they are asked to hear a recitation of Vedic literature, they refuse, saying, "What business do we have reading or hearing transcendental literatures? They are meant for neophytes." They pose themselves as too elevated to exert energy for reading, writing, and hearing. However, pure devotees under the guidance of Srila Rupa Goswami reject this Sahajiya philosophy. It is certainly not good to write literature for money or reputation, but to write books and publish them for the enlightenment of the general populace is real service to the Lord. That was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's opinion, and he specifically told his disciples to write books. He actually preferred to publish books rather than establish temples. Temple construction is meant for the general populace and neophyte devotees, but the business of advanced and empowered devotees is to write books, publish them, and distribute them widely. According to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, distributing literature is like playing on a great mridanga. Consequently, we always request members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to publish as many books as possible and distribute them widely throughout the world. By thus following the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, one can become a Rupanuga devotee. So I'll just conclude by reading. This is a statement of Rupa Goswami in the introduction to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He wrote, "Although I am the lowest of men and have no knowledge, the inspiration to write transcendental literatures about devotional service has been mercifully bestowed upon me. Therefore, I am offering my obeisances at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given me the chance to write these books." We'll stop there. Any questions, comments?